Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I am Paul Winkler, talking money and investing and all things financial. Yes, that's what we do around here. And joined this hour with an old friend. I don't want to call you old.
Golly.
I know. I start off right off the bat, right?
Just come out swinging.
Charles Alexander. His website, yourcharlesalexander.com.
Well, look at you.
Do I have that right? Yes.
Perfect.
All right. Beautiful. Okay. So you and I get into conversations, which are always fun, about business, because, you know, we talk about investing around here, but we also talk about, okay, how do you get to the point where you're making money that you can invest, and what do you do to make right. money? How do you run businesses and things like that? Because you work with a lot with entrepreneurs, and we have a lot of people that are listeners
sure.
that are entrepreneurs, obviously, all around the country, actually. I know we had a huge listenership in like Texas and yeah. California and Georgia and all over.
Yeah. You're big in Bismarck.
Bismarck.
North it's one Dakota? Of the Dakotas. I don't remember.
North Dakota.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, capital.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. And Pierre, South Dakota. See? How do you like that?
There's two nuggets for you, listener.
See? Look at that. I know my capitals. So don't test me anymore. So I got to start with.
Yeah.
You and I have a very similar story about vehicles from what I saw in my email this morning.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And it was just funny because I started reading your email this morning. You send this email out to people that are yeah. like subscribers and to your stuff. And it was about a vehicle that you set it all up.
Oh, I pimped it out, baby.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous. It,
yeah.
To me, it was gorgeous. It to anybody else, it looked like something a punk kid would have.
Yeah. Fuzzy dice.
Oh, yeah. I had a lower red pickup. I was in college and I this is like one of the very first vehicles I went, bought it on my own, took care of everything. No, uh-huh. you know, and nobody went and negotiated with it. And so uh-huh. I immediately did all the things you should do to a vehicle. I, you know, lowered it.
Or no, not everybody would do,
no,
but you would
nobody
do.
Nobody would do. I lowered it, put chrome rims on it, a racing steering
it.
Wheel.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's not yeah. even a thing anymore. Put fuzzy dice on there. I even had a Titans bobblehead right on the dash.
Yeah. I remember my 68 Chevy van.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Dodge van. Chevy. I said Chevy van. I'm thinking of the song. It was a Dodge van.
Yeah.
And put a stereo. The stereo.
Sure.
It was wonderful. Put this partition between the front and the back, you know, so yeah. that and you know, stereo speakers in the partitions and you know, it was like a little carpeting down, you know, in the back, so it was just nice and, you know, you could hang out and you could camp back there,
sure.
whatever you wanted to do.
You just
forgot one minor detail.
So look, the point of the story is I help people, a lot of business owners try to figure out how to do more by doing less. My whole purpose in life, I think, from this point forward, is just that. In the
being efficient. We don't want to make it sound like, you know, lazy, because you're anything but lazy.
Correct.
But it's being efficient.
Well, being efficient at effective things. But in this particular yes. case, I was very efficient on trying to make the car look good, very inefficient on focusing on the things that matter. So I'm on the way home from college. I was at MTSU. I was traveling back home. I'm from a town called Hampshire that nobody's ever heard of, minus me and the other eight people that live there. And it's on a country back road, and it kept, you know, I could see the little gauge going up. It's getting hot, yeah. and it started knocking. I'm like, what in the world? And all yeah. of a sudden, smoke come out of the hood.
Yeah.
And it was a bad deal because, you know, there's no cell phones. There's no way to contact anybody. And this nice gentleman picked me up, took me right down the road, gave me a quarter because my little, you know, punk self didn't have a quarter. Called my dad, and we start going back and forth through the conversation.
Yeah.
And, well, what'd you do? Well, I, you know, smoke it. When's the last time you changed your oil? change the oil. Oh, help my time, son. You ain't checked the oil. And nope, I hadn't checked the oil. And I had all the bells and whistles on the thing and,
right.
and didn't take care of the one basic thing,
right?
Motor oil that makes the car run. So that
right.
locked the engine up and no more. You know, my dear old dad had to bail me out of that one, find a junk engine somewhere else that we could replace it with. But it was a lesson that I held it near and dear to my heart. I was all focused in on the shiny object syndrome.
Right, looking great on the outside, but not necessarily everything is going well on the inside.
Right. Had my priorities out of whack. And, that'd be a great investing story.
Well, it is a great story because we do that in so many different areas of life. You know, it's like, you know, the things, well, you know, the story I like to tell. In regards to that is just how people typically tend to do the stuff that they like in their workday.
Sure. Yeah.
Before the things, the easy stuff, the things that they like doing and putting off the things that they don't like doing. And that came from The Road Less Traveled, that
Correct.
Book. Remember that book where, you know, this guy is talking to this woman that
Robert
hates
Frost.
Her job. Written by Robert Frost. I don't think so.
He wrote a poem, The Road Less Traveled, but either way.
Oh, no.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it was a book, and this guy was working with this woman. She hated her job, and she said, what is it you don't like your job, but do you like cupcakes or cake or something
sure.
like that, I think it was. And she says, oh, yeah, what do you like about it? I like the frosting. And he says, well, what do? I eat the frosting first, then I eat the cake. And she says, I know what you hate about your job. You're doing all the stuff in the morning that you love doing and mm-hmm. you're putting the stuff off and then you never get to it. So yeah, that's very common.
Well, another book on that topic, Eat That Frog, which is a Mark Twain
yes.
saying, but
yes.
Brian Tracy wrote a book. If the worst thing you have to do all day is eat a live frog, which good God, how Twain ever came up with that, I don't know.
Do that the first thing in the morning. Nothing worse
that's
happens
right.
to you the rest of the day.
That's it. You knocked it out first thing. So looking at, I work with a ton of entrepreneurs, but this bodes well for anybody that has a job, a busy professional. It doesn't matter who you are. And then you feel tired, overwhelmed. You're tired of checking email at 9 p.m. or you've missed Johnny and Susie's soccer game again, or you pushed date night out another week with a spouse. One of the first things I always tell folks you have to really focus in on, what are your priorities, period? And most folks can't answer that question.
Yeah, that's really good because I think about the different things that make your life work. And, you know, quite often I'll ask people, I'll say, what makes your life work? And they'll say, well, and then I'll go, I have to help them,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. Okay, your relationship with your spouse, if you're married.
Right.
Your kids, if you've got kids, friends.
Your health and well-being.
Your health.
Yeah.
Your, spirituality. Your finances.
Right.
And hobbies are another thing that I'll throw in there. But I'll throw a whole list of things, and then I'll have them rate it. And, because and typically they're going, oh gosh, on a scale of 1 to 10, I got to rate this. And you find that one thing is a 3 and the other thing is a 7. And you're going, well, imagine this is,
sure.
This is the road of life you're going on. It's a bumpy road because you got things that are, doing well and things that you just have completely neglected.
It's like the old analogy with the empty mason jar. And you have to fill it, and your options are stones, pebbles, and sand. And I'm sure people, some folks know what I'm talking about, but the old wives' tale goes, this philosophy professor stood in front of a class with an empty jar, said, is this jar full? They said, no, it's empty. He said, all right. He put 4 stones in there. He said, now is it full? He said, oh, of course it's full. Mm-hmm. So then he said, well, hold on. He poured pebbles all around, and the pebbles filled in around the stones. He said, mm-hmm. now is it full? They said, oh, well, now it's full. He said, well, mm-hmm. hold on. Then he poured in sand, and the sand filled in around the stones and the pebbles.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's full. Then he took a separate jar, said, all right, well, we're going to go in reverse. He poured all the sand in it, just filled to the top.
Mm-hmm.
He said, is this full? I said, yeah. They didn't understand the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point was the stones are just what Paul mentioned. Are those the core things that that make everything else go well? And to get morbid, are those the things that on your deathbed you'll look back at and say, oh, I wish I had time for, like I just said, another date night or spend more time with kids or hang out with Paul on the radio?
Yeah.
Or is it, do I want to spend one more minute checking another email, doing more internet research, doing more doom scrolling? That's the sand. So you just have to determine what those stones are and put them in first.
Yeah. So when you are dealing with somebody and they feel like they just can't slow down, where do you start with them?
Gosh, so a couple of different places. So when I ask people the same question, I get the same blank stares that you kind of get. I even had a meeting this morning with a client, super sharp. They're growing. You know, what are the top things you got to do? Well, I don't quite know. There's some ugly work that I know for a fact that that will work, but people have to commit to doing it. And the first thing you have to do is basically just kind of track what you're currently doing. There's all types of exercises. A great book you can get away with reading is The One Thing by Gary Keller.
I've heard of that.
Well, and it's about finding what are your top priorities. And that's a big, there's a big push right now. What's your calling? What's your purpose? What's your why? And all of those are great. But so many people are so overwhelmed they can't do it. So I help people literally track what are you doing all week long. To use a financial analogy, it'd be like me wanting to set a budget. Well, Charles, what's the most important things you spend money on? I could make it up, you know, rent, insurance, food. All right, well, we're going to set aside this money only to spend on that. Well, that's great if you know how you're spending your money. Most folks don't, so they have to create a personal budget. You know, me and the wife, we cheat, use Mint. And it, you know, it automatically, you know, kind of puts it out there for us, and we have to clean it up, fix the rest. But then we can say, hey, you know, if I tell Sarah we're only going to spend $500 on groceries this month, well, that's cute, but if we're spending $1,500, that's not realistic. So that's the first place. You've got to track and figure out where your time is currently going. Once you do that, as an adult, you can look back and say, all right, which one of these are the stones? Which one of these are the key points that if I do well that make everything else flow?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I'm smiling. I'm thinking, but that takes too much time to go and track where my time's going.
Oh, gosh. I've had so many people argue with me. So I use, that's why I use the financial analogy, or better yet, I'm telling you a true story. The day after the Super Bowl, I stepped on the scale. And it showed me a number I hadn't seen in a while. And I don't like that number. So I decided I got to get ruthless and start figuring out what the problem is. And it's all fun and games to say, I'm going to go to the gym more, cut back. But you've got to figure out how much you're consuming in terms of food. I use MyFitnessPal, a little app on my phone. And then you realize very quickly what you think you're eating versus reality aren't the same. So when you want to grab a handful of the kids' goldfishes, you help pack a lunch. Well, there's 200 calories. Or I want one extra glass of wine as we watch one extra Netflix show that we don't have time for. And then all of that adds up. So the argument I get from people all of a sudden, I don't have time to track my time. Well, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
If you don't do it and you just guess, or you think you know where you're spending your time, I can promise you, it's just like doing a personal budget. You don't know where your money's going until you track.
How do you do it? I mean, seriously, you know, what do you have like a piece of paper sitting in front of you? Do you carry like a notepad around with you?
It's different. It's different for different people. For me, what I found that works, and it's ugly, but I use a Google sheet, not even an Excel spreadsheet, a Google sheet.
Okay.
The purpose of that is because I can access it very easily from my phone or a laptop. Now, for other people, if you're out of the house, if you're in the field, if you're blue collar work, that legal yellow pad you have in front of you and a pen may work even better. For other people, they use an app like Clockify or Toggle.
So be super, super specific. What does it look like? Does it break the day into 15-minute segments, half-hour segments, and then you put in there what you did during that period of time? What does it look like?
I'm doing it as I don't try to break it down in 15, 20-minute segments. I'm just, so for right now, when I fill in my timesheet, and I'm doing it this week.
Yeah. Good example. What's going on?
I'm filling out, all right, commute to Goodlettsville.
Okay.
All right. From 10 to 11, talk to Paul. And then as I travel back from 11 to 11:15, what I was just telling you, drop off something for the kids from 11:15 to 12:15, gym, for every single aspect. And as you change tasks, it's important to track it, because if you don't, you'll lie to yourself and say, well, I was doing client research for an hour.
Yeah.
Really, well, about 45 minutes of that was spent on ESPN, TMZ, and talking to the person that was in the office next to you. If you track all that, you'll be able to see all the leakage.
Got it.
And I'm not telling you to do this for the rest of your life. Do it for about a week.
Yeah, that's a really good example because, man, how do I do this? I don't want to sound like, you know, I got it all together. But there is this thing about people ask me, how do you do everything that you do? I mean, because I have a lot of different things that I've got going on.
You do all the things. That's right.
I do a lot of things. And, you know, it is, I am very conscious of wasted time. I'm very conscious of combining things, for example. Like if I have two things that I can do and one is fairly mindless, another one takes a little bit of concentration, mm-hmm. I may combine them simply just because I can do one while I'm doing another thing. Like, for example, let's say that there is something, you know, working out. You know, I can work out and I can be listening to a book on tape or something sure. like that. You know, things like that.
Book on tape. You just showed our age.
Oh, I know. Tape. Yeah, tape. Digital book. Yeah. Whatever. But yeah, I tend to combine things, and I, you know, like walking my dog and sure. then, you know, doing, you know, listening to the daily audio Bible or something.
And that's one of the things that can work, but I have to help people get really honed in on the myth of multitasking, because it can work. But the problem is right now we're having a phone interview. If I decide to start checking my phone because somebody right. sent me a text, I am not doing two things at the same time. I am screwing up two things at the same time.
Yeah, because both of them actually require concentration.
Correct.
Walking my dog doesn't.
That's right. That's,
you know,
that's
so you
the
have
same as,
to be very specific about that.
That's
yeah.
right. That's an unconscious thing while you're doing a conscious thing. That's okay. But people think that we're all these brilliant multitaskers, and the reality is we're monotasking. Mm-hmm. We're just switching back and forth very quickly.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you said that intrigued me, this, and I got to get Charles come back in here. And speaking to Charles Alexander, it is his website, yourcharlesalexander.com. He is a business coach and helping people with entrepreneurs with their businesses. You said something about, and I would think it was Warren Buffett that you were actually mm-hmm. quoting. And it was the idea that successful people have a tendency to say no to everything. Now, he was exaggerating, I guess.
Sure.
As
well,
he's wanted to do.
His quote is that the difference between successful people and very successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything.
Almost is the key.
So the idea, and what I think even sparked this interview or conversation, is that for everything you say yes to, which is great, you've immediately said no to two other things.
Yes. And I think it's key to understand you don't say no to everything, because for me, one of the things that I found in throughout my life is that when opportunities walk through the door, you know, people, how did you choose what to do, Paul? And I sure. said, well, things would happen. People would ask me to do something and I'd go, you know what? That makes sense. And I didn't say no immediately just because I thought I couldn't do it or it was scary. Mm-hmm. I would look at it as God has opened a door.
Sure.
And, you know, it would be incumbent upon me to walk through a door that he has opened. How do you decide which things to say yes to and which things to say no to? We ought to probably talk a little bit about that. I take a break and talk a little bit about that on the other side, because I think that is key, is you don't want to say yes to everything, because then you end up with a really full schedule. And people that tend to be people pleasers will tend to do that.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And that yeah, I've got 10 stories.
Yeah, let's do that, because this is going to keep us. We don't ever have a problem talking, you and I. Listening to the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler, along with Charles Alexander of yourcharlesalexander.com, and we'll be right back after this. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to the Investor Coaching Podcast. Now, you may be one of these people that's been listening and realizing, wow, investing, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and financial planning, tax laws constantly changing, and recognizing that maybe you might need some help in this area, but you don't want just anybody to help you out. So we have 10 offices in the Middle Tennessee area, and everything we do is fee only. We align our interests with your interests. So you can get an initial 15-minute phone call with any one of our offices just by going to paulwinkler.com/call. That's it. Every one of the offices is run by somebody with 20 plus years experience. They're all degree planners. They all have academic backgrounds in investing, and you can get the help that you need. So if you want to set up a complimentary phone consultation, just go to paulwinkler.com/call. And we look forward to seeing you soon. All right, we are back here on the Investor Coaching Show. I am Paul Winkler. He is Charles Alexander of yourcharlesalexander.com is his website. He is a coach of entrepreneurs and a longtime friend. So I I see his emails and he sends things, you know, they're fascinating. And I said, you got to get in here. We got to go and have another conversation. Tell him you've got a book. How's the book stuff been going?
Man, the book stuff's been going pretty well. I haven't pushed it nearly as much as I should, but
well, go ahead, push it.
All right. Well, Start Now, Quit Later. The How to Start and Grow a Business Without Quitting Your Full-Time Job is a book I published. Oh man. Last July. It's done well. I've talked to several people about it. It's one of the few things that I'm kind of really passionate about, talking about narrowing down the things you want to focus in on. And I've seen entirely too many people launch a business after they've quote unquote burned the boats, cashed out the 401k and headed out the door.
Yeah.
And even in doing that, you know, I've since launched my own podcast, Do More by Doing Less. And as Paul pointed out, it doesn't mean I want you to be lazy. I just want you to focus in on more of the things that matter. And, you know, I've got a group coaching program going right now, mm-hmm. How to create your own 4-day work week in 90 days or less. And that doesn't mean it has to be a strict 4-day work week, but I'm working with too many entrepreneurs. Their 4-day work week looks like an 8-day work week, you know, and they're plugging in 70, 80 hours and missing out. They've got money freedom. They don't have time freedom, which kind of kills the point of the money freedom.
Right, exactly. What's the purpose of money? To express the values that you hold dear.
That's right. And so many people you talked about, why do you earn money? Well, they want to get their freedom. Well, their money, unfortunately, the way they went about it, created the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we talked about that book and you can check out, there's a podcast on it where Charles and I are talking about his book. So you can scroll through my website and find that. Okay, so we were talking about people that have a tendency to say yes to everything because mm-hmm. they tend to be a little bit of a people pleaser personality type where, you know, maybe when they're young, they got through something that was difficult by just being nice. You know, nobody beats up the nice kid. Nobody beats up the kid that makes you laugh all the time. Nobody, you know, beats up the kid that can beat you up. You know, so some people get through life by fighting. So what is it about people pleasing and saying yes to everything? You say you have stories about that. What does that look like?
In general, when you're thinking about, especially if you're an entrepreneur, if you're in the first 5-10 years, people want you to be on every board, serve on every committee, help mm-hmm. in any way possible. Mm-hmm. The old, can I pick your brain, which I bet Paul probably gets on a weekly, if not more so, basis if somebody wants to have a cup of coffee with him around the corner and have him regurgitate everything that somebody else has to pay him for usually, which is a nice thing to do. But at some point, if you say yes to every opportunity, you have to realize anytime you say yes to something, you are saying no to probably a couple of other things that might be more important. So in looking at doing that, and make sure folks understand I'm saying this the right way. It happens more, I think, to mamapreneurs than it does to guys or dads because they have a heavier heart and they're, you know, get a real thing called mom guilt.
Sure.
And I'll make sure, I won't lie to my wife and tell her I didn't interview today, but using her as an example, she has served on every board, every PTO thing, every time one of the kids asked her to do something that she might not have got to do when she was a kid, she'll do. Or the same as with her family or even mine asking her to take on this or go do that. And it, you know, how do you say no? You want to be helpful. You want everybody to have the experience they want, but she has her own bookkeeping business.
Right.
And she's recently taken on new clients and, you know, do we have time for it? And, you know, she still wants to be the one that does a lot of the mom stuff or, you know, the house chores. All those things add up. So what takes the hit? Well, now I can't go to the gym like I wanted. Now I can't go hang out with my friend Kim like I wanted. Now I can't, we were gonna go on a date or whatever. And I'm saying it's her. I do the same thing.
Sure.
It's easier to pick on her because I'm watching.
Right. Well, you know, and I think that's an issue of boundaries. You know, a boundary would be, hey, you know, I am absolutely blown away that you're asking me to do this, but I know what will happen is that I'll actually not be able to do as good of a job as you need and as you deserve. And I really need to, I had to pass this up, but I really need to turn this down because it's actually not going to be good for anybody.
100%. Yes. And I've had people say, well, what do I say? And the way you just said it is 100%. I've been asked, dude, I get asked regularly to serve on this board, this committee, whatever. And I've had to learn to say, hey, right now, and I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and this is for anybody sure. listening who wants to ask me to be on something. Like, I'm actually cutting things right now. I'm right. not adding anything. In fact, I am, you know, I'm serving on this or I'm doing that. I'm cutting that. And here's a quick follow-up that people will try to guilt you into. Well, okay, what would you help find the replacement I'm looking for? And you can also tell them, I would love to, but the last two times I did that, that turned into a full-time thing.
Right.
So,
and I can't be responsible for what somebody else is going to do. That it's always very frustrating to try to choose somebody or try to refer somebody to somebody. And then all of a sudden they disappoint you and then you feel bad because, it's just.
So here's what I often tell folks. When you're trying to evaluate whether or not you're going to take on a new opportunity role or whatever, and you feel the reason we do it more than not is guilt. It's not because we are ambitious, because we love it, because somebody complimented us. And now we feel like we have to reciprocate and it's an uneven match. So if you're asked to do something that you don't feel like you've got time over. So first of all, ask, is this a heck yes? I want to do it because I'm excited. If it's not, then okay, then maybe not. And then the other thing is like, how much does it recur? Is it a one-time thing? You know, is there any other way to accomplish that task? But then you have to look at, if I take this on, it's really only about an hour a week. Okay, well, hour a week, once you do the math on, it's really 2 hours a week. Well, then it turns into three because you're using your brain, your cognition to think of whatever this task is you've been dealt. So that's 12 hours a month. Great. Do you have 12 hours a month? If you do, what will you not do now in order to take on this new task?
And sometimes that's a hard one.
Hey, sometimes it's totally worth it. But if the if I'm taken away from TV or doom scrolling, great.
Not a problem.
if it's to take on something that makes the world a better place and I might not get to use it, that's fine. But if it means I'm taking on 12 hours of drudgery that I hate, that turns into an extra 12 hours of me doing mental gymnastics over how bad I hate it and I'm losing sleep, then what's the trade-off? Well, you're not going to see, you're not going to get to go to Lane's practice tonight, or you're not taking Lily to voice, or, you don't get to do some house chores that make the rest of the family happy, whatever it is. That's how you have to weigh out each of those decisions. And the reason I tell people, like, look, start off by saying no. You can go, I use the same thing with the kids.
Yes.
You can go back and say yes later. If you say yes out of the gate, it's almost impossible to undo it.
Right. And saying no, it's almost like exposure therapy.
No.
The idea of exposure therapy, if you don't know what that is, it's where you're progressively introducing something that you're afraid of in your life and just seeing if you can get over some of the fears that you have. And I use the example of spiders all the time. Put the spider inside of a fish tank at first, and then eventually take away the top off the fish tank. Then the third step, you take the fish tank away and you put the spider on the table, and little by little,
you're giving me anxiety.
I know it is, but what happens is by saying no, because we typically think the whole world's going to end if I tell somebody no.
And that's right.
And by just trying it on the little things, and you start to find out that people don't dislike you. They start to respect that you have boundaries around your time.
That's right. That's another thing I've told people, because I have clients that say, you don't understand my business, and whatever business they say, they think their business, I'm a landscaper, salon coach, insert whatever here.
Yeah.
My clients need me 24/7. So recently I had this client that has custom cabinetry business. It has exploded, and great for her. But she was responding to texts at 2 a.m. from clients.
My goodness.
Like this last one was up watching HGTV, and Chip and Joanna Gaines we're doing something. So she thought she had to text her right away. I said, here's how we're going to set some boundaries, and it's easy to do.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. You want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.